You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Shea Pataja, and I'm here for the stats and laughs.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome aboard to another episode of Prout Financial Design's New Retirement Radio, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
It is great to be here. Thank you, Ron. On Thursday, 6/23 of 22, first day of summer, that means, so the longest Sunday, if you will, was it yesterday, the 22nd then?
Or the 21st.
21st, the solstice occurred, 5:20 in the morning, I think. Mm-hmm. So yesterday, the 22nd, was the longest, was the first full day of summer.
First full day.
Yeah, 24 hours of summer.
And the 21st is called the summer solstice.
Solstice.
So you can say it, the word.
You are.
Excellent. Also joining us today, here this morning, with us, Heidi Cartwright.
Good morning. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Retirement Income Certified Professional and Managing Executive of Prout. Man, it's good to be here. It is good to be here.
It's a beautiful day.
Oh, my gosh. It's gorgeous outside. Gorgeous. The variety of weather, just dynamic. Last night, we were visiting with some friends, Dave and Kim. Hi. And at their place, and just gazing up at the trees versus the sky. Contrast. Very nice.
We wait a long time for this.
That's true. We suffer through a lot to get to this point.
That's right. And last week I had a staycation, which I highly recommend. I've never done that. I've never stayed in Traverse City and rented a place. We rented a place on Little Glen Lake for my boyfriend's family. They came from Hawaii, Arkansas, and Illinois. And the 10 of us with the kids stayed on the lake, rented a pontoon boat, did the dunes, Fishtown, Arts Tavern. We did all the things.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
It was so fun. And I thought, man, why don't I kick off every summer with enjoying it before it gets crazy up here, right? Because we had access to everything. We could get into places. And it was just a riot. And I went home after vacation and took a 5-hour nap.
I believe it.
We went so hard, you know.
Yeah. It's not insane yet. What a great time to enjoy it, right?
It was wonderful.
You bet. Mm-hmm. So today we're talking about how to handle market declines. Now, some of you may have noticed, tongue in cheek, that the market, stock market as we know it, has come down.
A bit.
It's come down about 6,000 points from the beginning of this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Currently today it's up 100. So, you know, It's
got a ways to go.
It does. It does have a way to go. So how do we handle those? What could our attitude possibly be? How do we think about this? What adjustments might we make? And how do we avoid making a bad situation possibly even worse than it already is? First, loss aversion theory. We as humans fear loss. We don't like it. Mm-mm. So acknowledging that can be a big part of this. Now, Shay's going to have some questions later in the show. And then Heidi is also going to be discussing, working as well as Social Security, taking Social Security income. So how to navigate those things. Too much stuff to talk about, way too little time. So we're going to move right on through it. Loss aversion theory simply means that people feel the pain of losing money more than they feel, if you will, the joy of gaining. A 10% loss is much more difficult to navigate than a 10% gain. They don't equate to each other in our minds. It tends to be more of a difficult thing to journey through.
It doesn't feel good to lose, and it doesn't feel good to continue to put your savings into investments every month, knowing that that's what's happening. It's a hard mindset to stay in.
That's because we have pain avoidance. And so I think when we tend to shy away from the pain and the discomfort rather than when things are good, we're just going along and it doesn't come up on the radar.
So sometimes continuing to do what we think is the painful thing is the very best thing. Because if we're averaging in, as you mentioned, I mean, that is a great illustration. In fact, that's one of the ways to handle market declines, is take advantage of lower prices. Well, who wants to throw good money after bad? You know, we've all heard that old axiom. Well, if you're putting money in while the market is down and you continue to invest through that cycle, that's where you win in the end. And in fact, this gentleman at the Economic Club was talking about dollar cost averaging and how far, and that was back, it wasn't the most recent time,
but
it was back
a
couple months ago. In fact, Shay had accessed that and sent that video. It was amazing the difference in the full dollar amount that this particular situation they had. So we tend to not enjoy the pain. So acknowledging it, the natural instinct is to flee the market when it's going down, because we think that we're locked in, that things won't change. Yes, Ron?
Ask a question that might help illustrate this. It wasn't that long ago that I was with you and you said, well, look at Microsoft is down, I think, 242 right now, which you said was low. I just looked at it's 255 now.
Yeah.
So if that was 2 weeks ago, does that mean as people continue to put money into their 401 and IRAs, if those funds are buying Microsoft, does that mean that they made money, right? If they bought it 242, it's at 255 now.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they made money because in essence, it's up about $13 a share. A quick study, that's about 5.5% or so, rough guess, in the period of 2 weeks. Now, the other part of this is we don't tend to remember that part of it. Mm. We just think, well, you know, I bought it at 300. I've still lost, you know, $50 a share, whatever that is, okay? So think about it. You have to reconfigure sometimes your brain in terms of this. Would you have been able to make that money back somewhere else? Possibly. But possibly it's the very best thing to just stay with it because sometimes these things react too negatively. They are priced too low for what their real true value is, given the market eventually reconnoiters and says, things may be changing. Perhaps the Fed, and that's why the market is tending to move more positively now. Many market prognosticators, if you will, believe that the Fed is not going to be quite as serious with their interest rate increases as they were previously saying, even though they did 75 basis points here already, or 3/4 of an interest rate hike. They think that they may not come in as much. The other thing that's going on in politically, now politicians don't have a lot of impact on the markets, but psychologically it will be viewed generally as more business positive. Republicans have a huge chance of winning both the House and Senate in the fall. That will generally be viewed from a business standpoint as being more positive. All right? No comments on that one.
No one touches that.
I'm staying out of the political realm. It's fascinating. Those percentages right now, just because you brought the subject up, the betting sites, which our own economist references here periodically, the odds of the betting sites as of 6/18 of 22, Republicans win Senate control 76%. Second, Republicans win House control almost 91%. Wow. Republicans win the 2024 presidential election 56.7%. So, wow.
So much can happen between now and...
It certainly can.
The next election.
Don't bet the farm.
Nope.
But those are interesting stats nonetheless. So market declines are part of investing. Natural instinct is to flee. We think success can be locked in. Failure can also be locked in. No, not at all. Market declines are part of investing. Declines don't last forever. another, I think, great point. The typical time frame, the average time frame, this goes back to 1952 through 2021. I'll just list a couple of these stats. A 10% or more decline will happen once per year, about once per year. Wow. The average length of that is 110 days. The last occurrence, September of 20. The market will also decline 20% or more about once every 6 years. The last 20% decline was in March of 2020. What they often forget, and we've mentioned before, that April following, the April of 20, was the biggest stock, one-month stock increase in 30 years.
Crazy.
Yes.
So if you jumped out in March, you would have missed April.
That's correct. Now, the average increase, just because you ask, we'll talk about that in a minute. Time in the market matters. Second point, not market timing. Even missing out in just a few trading days can take a huge toll on returns. These numbers were really surprising. A hypothetical investment of $1,000, and this is, by the way, from American Funds, RIA Insider, Registered Investment Advisor, Insider is what it's called. Even missing out in just a few trading days can take a toll. A hypothetical investment of $1,000 in the S&P 500, 500 stocks as tracked through McGraw-Hill, the S&P 500, in 2012, would have grown to more than $3,790. So we just call it $3,800, can we? $3,800 by the end of 21, 12 to 21. But if that same investor missed just 10 of the best trading days during that period, he or she would have ended up with how much?
Shay, that's you.
Hilarious. Funniest joke we've
Instead of $3,800, it would have been $2,100. 10 days. Out of that period of time, about 9 years, right? 9 years.
It's crazy.
If you'd missed 20 of the best days, $1,575, well less than half of that amount. 58% rather less. Emotional investing can be hazardous. A gentleman named Kahneman won his Nobel Prize in 2002 for his work in behavioral economics, a field that investigates how individuals make financial decisions. Emotional reactions to market events are perfectly normal. Investors should expect to feel nervous when markets decline. It's okay to feel nervous. Consult with your consultant. Talk to us. Talk. Sometimes can make a huge difference. Yes, Heidi.
Well, there is, in the American Funds article, there's a quote from Warren Buffett. It says, "The market is the most efficient mechanism anywhere in the world for
mechanism. Thank you.
For transferring wealth from inpatient people to patient people."
That was a tough quote.
It's a tough
quote. Aye.
Not just
saying
mechanism.
It's the most efficient way to move money from impatient people to the patient.
Patient people.
Yes.
I was thinking that, but I just didn't say it.
Well, they do. For our Flourish event for women, the stats show that over the long run, women are better investors because they make more measured choices and take their time selecting and staying with the investment. And
okay, hang on.
They may be more patient.
Dennis has to collect himself
Ron,
here for
let's
a minute.
Let's pause for just a moment, okay? Ron,
yes.
Are you with us here?
Yes.
Shay, could you say that again, please?
Over time, women tend to be better investors.
They do. Thank you for bringing that up. And that is absolutely the truth because they tend to be more patient.
Conservative. More conservative?
And more conservative as well. They're often, not always, we can't use blanket statements here, but often, you know, when I have couples, the women tend to be more, not always, I'm going to get in trouble here, but they tend to be more methodical, more willing to work through the difficulties. Yes.
I mean, this is a recent stat. Women outperform men by 40 basis points on average. And that's from Fidelity, I'm just saying.
Oh, these men and their egos and their pride, they're really quite insufferable. I can't help it.
I just had to say it.
That was the Katharine Hepburn statement. I couldn't help her either. Yeah, well, no, really. But it sounded somewhat like her in my mind, so, yeah.
All right.
There's going to be no place for dames.
Scram, you dames.
Emotional investing can be hazardous. Emotional reaction to market events are perfectly normal. Investors should expect to feel nervous, but it's the actions taken during such periods that can mean the difference between investment success and shortfall. Make minor adjustments, minor changes to your readings, if you will, to either cut risk or take advantage of the opportunities. All investments have risk. All investments have risk, but generally, okay? So it's just important to possibly make adjustments. Do you need to cut your risk? Take a look at your own risk tolerance. What is our time frame? Do we need income? You know, there are usually 8 to 10 questions we want to ask. Are the people that I'm using right now, are they the very best people that can handle this kind of stuff? Are they the ones making the best decisions for me? You know, you can have the very best house. We still have a storm outside. We get it. It's a great house. I'm glad I fixed it. Whatever it is I did, I'm glad that I took care of that. It's raining now. So
how's your roof?
Sometimes weathering the storm can be the very best thing to do. Just sitting it out. Sometimes doing nothing is the very best thing to do. But sit down and talk about it. Acknowledge the fear. Acknowledge the pain. Everybody's there. All right, so we have a ton of stuff to talk about, and Shay's going to ask a few questions, but I want to make one last point before we get into the questions and as well as the stats.
Mm-hmm.
Time in the market matters. We talked about that. Another stat may be helpful. Every S&P 500 decline of 15% or more since 1929, now this goes back a ways. Some people would say that's from 1929 through 2020, about 91 years. The average return in the year after, 55%.
Mm.
Since World War II, declines of 20%, where the market had gone down 20% in the prior year, the average rate of return in the following year, 22.7% from there. So it's not a guarantee. It didn't work all those times out of the last 12 times. It didn't work out of the two of those times. But the chances rise dramatically of an improvement in the year following. All right?
All right.
Shay has some stats for us here.
You want to do stats first?
Yeah, let's do stats first and then Kes Jones.
Okay, great. After suffering 10 separate bear markets between 1950 and 2021, the S&P 500 recovered and eventually achieved a new all-time closing high each time. The average length of time it took to retrace its steps from a bear market low to a new closing high was 25 and a half months, or more than 2 years. The quickest recoveries for stocks took place over just 3 months in 1982, while the longest recovery took 70 months, or nearly 6 years, and that was between 1974 to 1980, and that's from BTN Research.
Hmm. And we talked about that. Business Week came out with that article. I think it was in 1974, the end of the stock market as we know it.
Yeah, if you Google
just about at the market bottom, they called it just about perfectly there.
Yeah, and if you Google that image comes up a lot for recessions. The weekday daily circulation of U.S. newspapers has fallen 57% over the two decades between 2000 and 2020, and that's from the Census Bureau.
Newspaper circulation down 50%, you said?
57%.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Wow.
Consumer sentiment, not sediment, I always get those two mixed up, sentiment over of the American shopper, an indicator of how optimistic consumers feel about their finances, fell in June 2022 to its lowest ever.
Ooh.
Consumer sentiment has been tracked monthly since January of 1978, and that's from the University of Michigan. An estimated 5 million American workers are not covered by Social Security. The group, comprised of state and local government workers, are not required to pay payroll taxes, but are guaranteed by law to receive comparable, quote-unquote, retirement benefits from their employer. And that's the Center for Retirement Research. That's shown to be a little bit difficult sometimes if those haven't been funded properly, so...
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Mm-hmm. Boy, it's not just about the income of the retirement benefits. It's about the spousal benefits and also about any benefits for children, for...
disability.
Disability, yeah, as well. Mm-hmm. So there are all kinds of other benefits that can accrue, too. I just feel like I'm kind of speaking for Bob Simpson.
So there, channeling the Bob Simpson.
Yeah, yeah, channeling there.
You have to be way more excited about it. Because Bob's very happy about Social
Enthusiastic.
Yeah, I love Bob. He's so good.
He is. I agree.
The median cost of a semi-private room in a nursing home facility is $7,900 per month, or approximately $95,000 per year, based on the data collected from nationally in August of 2021. And that's from the Genworth Cost of Care Survey.
Something you wanted to add to that stat, Ron?
It's shockingly high.
Yeah. Well, it's actually higher than that. In real life, it's even higher.
It is.
Yeah. That's the average.
That's the average.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, when I've heard people call, you know, friends calling around, it's usually between 10 and 12.
Yeah.
Right?
It's 10 to 12,000 a month.
Insane.
A month. Right. That's why Medicaid steps in. Most people have spent down their assets over a period of a few years. And Medicaid has to step in and cover the cost.
All right. Well, here's a sports stat. For those of you who love those, I'm doing this for you.
Sports.
Thank you.
Rob Walton, the 77-year-old eldest son of Sam Walton, bought the NFL's Denver Broncos for $4.65 billion on June 8th of 2022, an all-time record for the NFL franchise. The previous record purchase price was $2.275 billion paid by David Temper for the Carolina Panthers of May of 2018.
Incredible. We'll see whether or not he overpaid for that, right?
Yeah.
Huge dollars.
Can I run by? I don't know if you can answer this one, if it's
sure.
In the bailiwick on text line. It says, we'll ask, is there a common law marriage in Michigan? And the story is, we've been together for 10 years. We have a 9, 7, and 4-year-old kids together. It looks like we're separating and just got disability Social Security at 36, $4,000 a month. What is she entitled to?
If they're
not married. So if there's enough information there, if they're common law, they're not married, but they've been together 10 years, have three kids together, now it sounds like they're separating and just started getting disability from Social Security.
I believe you have to be officially married. I don't think there's a common law marriage in the rule books for Social Security, but you would want to check with the Social Security Department on that particular question, because I am not 100%, but I think it has to be officially married.
Yeah, I don't know if they still do it. The Grand Traverse Leland Antrim Bar Association used to have, you could call a number and ask a lawyer a simple question like that. Or listen, I don't know, next time Phil Settles is on the air. Today? Oh, okay. He does Ask the Lawyer with us once a week.
He may know the answer to that. That'd be interesting.
Before we do the questions with Shay, we have Tommy calling in from Douglas Lake.
All right,
let's
do it.
Let's go to Tommy. Beautiful Douglas Lake there. Good morning, Tommy.
Thank you. Yes, you know, it's a great conversation on the down markets, but the thing that bothers me, and I've been investing for maybe 35, 40 years, they're not talking about the elephant in the room.
And what is this elephant?
Biden and the policies that are going on now.
Oh, yeah. Well, the voters are going to talk here in the fall, I think. All right?
Right.
Yeah, they're not talking about it, but yeah. So you're saying the news organizations really aren't bringing up all the issues related to the declining economy and, in essence, the policies of the current administration reflecting themselves on that economy. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that, but I'm saying that you all didn't mention it at all. And I don't. Do you not feel like that's part of the problem?
So you mean you think in relation to the lower stock prices, and you've talked about all of the patterns, Dennis.
You know what? It's interesting. We did mention the fact that the chances for change in the election, or rather in the results from the election in the fall, would most likely occur. But all of these stats that we're referencing, you are correct, are simply using historical stats. We didn't talk specifically, and these stats didn't specifically bring up the impact of the current administration on that. So we didn't address it. We weren't trying to avoid it, honestly.
Okay.
It just weren't included in that particular amount of stats, if you know what I'm saying.
It's so glaring. Then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you brought up the point, and it's much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
With all the patterns that you identify, the ups and downs, politics or policy affects all of that.
It does.
What we're seeing now, policy, I'm sure, is affecting it.
If you put a noose on production, you know, we get that. And I think the best explanation of a part of the current economy is versus what happened when Carter was president was it's a pushing down or attempt at pushing down demand. Well, guess what? It's working. But it's working to such a degree that I don't think even they in Washington anticipated it, given the cost for moving goods, truckers, and all the rest, diesel fuel at twice what it was, all the inputs that it takes for fertilizers and to handle growing things. Farmers, what have they said? Well, we're not going to have the same results in the fall because we couldn't afford the fertilizers required. I don't think they anticipated that in Washington, D.C. See, that's where I'm coming from. But none of that sort of stuff was included in the stats, and it perhaps goes without saying. But, the tamping down of demand to such an extent is not a good policy in the end. It's an attempt at control. It's controlling the populace, and our populace doesn't like control. Thank you very much. I probably said enough about that, right?
So anytime there's a change in the market, a big change, you can assume at least part of that's due to policy.
Part of that's due to policy.
Could be like a pandemic or a war.
Yes.
But
and statistically, whenever the markets decline dramatically, it always has an impact on the White House. Mm. Always. I mean, it's amazing. If you go back decades over decades and look at what the stock market has done, it impacts the economy. And it also impacts the current people in power. And I think they know that, although I'm not sure. But I think they do. If they don't know it now, they will soon.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Yeah, appreciate it. Wowie. Okay.
Did he hit a nerve, Dennis?
Yeah.
So my question is, when I was preparing for the show throughout the week, you know, everyone's like, recession. And then the question is, are we in a recession? That's what everyone keeps talking about.
Yeah.
But what qualifies one, and are we in one? Can you clarify that?
Well, we don't know yet. We've had the first quarter of declining gross domestic product. If we get a second quarter of that by the end of 6:30, given that we're at 6:23 right now, we'll know.
Okay.
That would be two successive quarters of declining GDP. We don't know that yet. Now, what's interesting is the stock market and its relationship to that. The stock market, it tends to call the bottom. It always responds before the end of the recession, always. We can't ever say always. Often responds before the end of the recession. So it's not as though they're going to call a halt to the recession and the market's going to respond dramatically. The market will have already run away 10, 15, 20% on the way up generally. Because they're looking at the future. They're saying, oh, look at this. As we've already discussed, the Fed may not cut interest rates or raise interest rate as much. Politics, the political spectrum may change in the fall. All those sorts of things. They're trying to gaze into the future to see if the environment is going to improve for making profits for business. Costs come down. So do inputs, and then production tends to rise. And many times, it's just the psychology of it. I heard a great quote from an opposing politician saying, if Biden just did these three things, like talking about opening up the pipeline, if he opened up the lease options, And one other point, I forget what it was. We'd see oil go down overnight by $30 to $40 a barrel. And I thought, isn't that interesting? Just the psychology of changing the tenor of the conversation and opening up the floodgates, if you will, the market responds. So many times it's just psychology of where the environment is.
And okay. the word recession, I think people get hung up on, from reporters to others. Are we in a recession? Are we headed that way?
Sure.
And how many people know what a recession is?
Yeah.
It's just that psychological.
It is. And word. The fear of it. Oh, the unknown, right?
So it's two quarters.
Yeah. And many times the economy needs to work through a slowdown to get back running again as well.
Well, Dennis, that goes back to what you were talking about earlier in the show, timing. That's why it's so hard to time the market, because by the time you realize you're coming out of the recession, the market's already gone. And if you're on the sidelines, it's hard to jump in. You've probably already missed some of that recovery. So
next to
timing
impossible.
is very difficult to get your head around and to know when it's happening.
The only way I know to say this is the shopping list is out in such detail that I've not seen this in, honestly, 10 years. The number of companies and stocks that these analysts view as being great values right now, it's specific, and the numbers are amazing. So, you know, that's probably the best indicator I can give of a generally positive investment to positive timing, rather, to continue owning and or to make possible adjustments to your ownership.
I think one thing for myself, and I'm sure other people feel this way, is it's also hard to live close to your money, meaning looking at your budget, looking at whether or not you have a sufficient emergency fund set up, and if your debt is under control, and you're purchasing it with the most power you have within your control. And that, I feel like, is where the pain is for most people on a daily basis. You have a debit card you can swipe. You can tap your phone. It's so easy to spend. And for me, the only thing I feel like I have control of is that right now, and then looking at what I'm willing to invest and can I continue to save. And then we have these outlier situations that happen. You have a medical emergency. Well, you didn't plan on that. Or your kid gets sick and, you know, those things, I think, are what really put people over the edge when you're living this close to the line, especially just daily expenses like gas.
Oh,
you know,
the
that
inflation.
That is painful for people who are doing their best.
And guess what? Spending is coming down. People are traveling less and all the rest. They're already making their adjustments because it's an economic decision. And we're seeing that slowdown right now. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Great. Yep. So let's just do one more question before we have to go to a break.
We'll
here. What if someone just retired? You know, if you just retired, and what do you do?
Well, it is a mindset decision. And you also, if you've already had a financial plan done, we've done a few of those where we take a look at it again. How are we doing? Do we need to make any adjustments? Are you fine? You know, you may be just fine given where you're at right now. It may surprise you. We've had those meetings. I guess we're okay then. Yes, you are. So are we okay? Do we need to make any adjustments? Have those difficult meetings. If you face the music. How are we doing? Can we make any adjustments? What can we do with what there is? Your favorite quote, Shay. Now's not the time to think of what we can't do. Think of what we can do with what there is. It may seem simplistic, but man, is it true. As soon as you engage, it's amazing the power of that. It surprises me every last time. Write it down. I am going to do this, and this as a result of what's going on now, and I will get it done.
The opposite of anxiety is action. So
action.
It's rising above that fear. If you rise above the fear and the noise, which we're trying to help people do, not just now, but the last couple of years have been so insanely unpredictable.
They've been difficult emotionally, you know, recognizing that. It's been tough emotionally, but action is what creates the results. If you've had enough time to think about it, consider all the options. Take the actions that can make the difference. What can I do now? That's where, you know, they've called it the locus of control, pulling it back to yourself.
This leads us very nicely into Heidi's topic after the break, which is, you know, what if you want to go back to work, but you're collecting Social Security?
Social Security and income. Let's take a break, shall we, Ron?
We shall break it.
You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner, Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Shea Pataja, and I put the fin in financial. No, really, I'm Finnish. And it's pronounced sauna, not sauna.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio. It's Prout Financial Design in Traverse City. Dennis Prout is with Heidi Cartwright and Shea Pataja. Welcome back.
It's great. Let's put the mics on. There we go. Thank you so much. So Heidi, talking about Social Security and earned income, wages. How does that work?
All right. Yeah. So we're going to go over back over a topic that we have mentioned before on the show. But when you have substantial earned income before your full retirement age and you are receiving Social Security benefits, this can cause some or all of your Social Security benefits to be withheld. And what they put in place is called the annual earnings test. And that is what determines if they are going to withhold benefits or not. So here's some basics on that annual earnings test. The maximum reduction from someone's full retirement age is 30%. So if you take Social Security early, like at 62, you could have a reduction from that full retirement benefit if you waited to your full retirement age. So if you were, that's 30% if you were born before, born in 1960 or later, because people who were born prior to 1960, people between 1955 and 1960 are on a graduated scale of 66 and a number of months is your full retirement age.
So not that we're stating your date of birth, Ron, but your full retirement age might be, for instance, 66 and 8 months or whatever.
Perhaps that could be it. Yes.
Yeah. All right.
So in 2022, someone who is under full under their full retirement age for the entire year, while earning more than $19,560, stands to see Social Security benefits drop by $1 for every $2 over that threshold. And the cuts will come before the first dollar of benefits is paid. So if you were in that situation, you could have a couple of months where you wouldn't receive that Social Security benefit at all.
Right.
Depending on the numbers, of course. All right, and once the coveted month of full retirement age, and that's the age, your full retirement age, once you reach that full retirement age, then you don't need to worry about this annual earnings test. After you reach full retirement age, you can go out and work as much as you want, and there will be no reduction in your benefits for the amount of income that you make.
So $1 million could be your earnings, and it wouldn't affect your Social Security
benefit
itself. You might be taxable. It might be taxable. Did you have that something there?
$1 million.
See, thank you.
So that full retirement age, it's important to know what that number is.
It is indeed.
Yes. Well, right. Also, Heidi, this reminds me of, you know, the people who retire and then they're bored. It's like a couple years into it, they're like, oh, I think I'm going to start a consulting firm or get this new job. And it's like, oh, you might have to wait a few years.
You need to move some other pieces to this puzzle to make it work again. Now, you can stop your Social Security benefits if your earnings are going to be too high. But don't try to navigate the two things together until you speak with the Social Security Administration or your most trusted financial advisor.
Advisors, Prout Financial.
There you go, yes.
Okay.
Well, that brings us to the question then, what is considered earned income, right?
Right.
So earned income comes from employment, either by working for someone else or you're working as a self-employed person. Earnings include all Social Security covered wages, salary, bonuses, tips, things like that. Wages not covered by Social Security, which might be paid to employees by certain government employers, such as state teacher retirement systems. And that is a unique exception, but if you're in that situation, that's something that you would want to check on. Now, only the earnings of the individual who is drawing the Social Security will be included. So if you are married and your spouse is still working and they haven't claimed Social Security, that won't go into that equation on that annual earnings test.
Darling, I can't believe how much money you made last year.
That happens.
Boy, that's kind of nice. So if she, in this instance, for instance, were making that much income, it wouldn't impact my own Social Security benefits. Uh-huh.
Exactly.
I love it, and we're almost out of time there, Heidi.
There's some other excluded income if we have time.
No. Do we have time? No.
We don't have time. So I guess you'll have to
this
stay
actually
tuned.
Could be a great segment for next week. We can add to that.
Yeah.
All righty.
That's a good one. Thanks, Ron. Man, what a great day. Thank you.
Dennis Prout, Shea Pataja, Heidi Cartwright from Prout Financial Design on the web at proutfinancialdesign.com. Thank you all.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.